lovely to have this space that we can rest into and hopefully feel quite supported by this Gaia House online Dharma Hall. So my name's Nathan. I'm one of the teachers of Insight Meditation from Gaia House. And it's a real deep pleasure to be here with you. And this evening or afternoon, wherever you are, we'll have a short meditation and related to that a reflection. And then some time for more sharing. So that might be take the form of a question and answer format or your own reflections or anything at all you'd like to share with us. And then for the last 15 minutes of this hour and a half session, we'll divide into small breakout groups where those who wish to can stay on and meet in twos and threes and share a little bit more in the Dharma there. So we can use the chat, and it's actually quite a nice function that we can have this kind of flow of information passing through between us in the chat format. And one of the things I really find it's very helpful for is actually the sharing of our intentions and what it is that brings us to practice right now, what it brings us to a Dharma event like this. And it's such an important part of our practice. I really hope that it's something that you enjoy to do. You know, when you go to sit down, you're really clear, like, well, what is it I want to bring into being through this meditation? What is it I want to cultivate? One of the ways we can translate the word meditation is cultivation. You know, we cultivate plants, bring into being. What is it you'd like to bring into being? What's it like you'd like to offer or make from this time? So invite you, if you'd like to share a few of those into the chat, if that feels helpful. Lovely, some calm and joy to settle. Yeah. Sense of curiosity. Kind attention. Gather the team of heart, body, and mind together. Yeah, practicing with Sangha, peace and connection, truthfulness and seeing what is true, sitting with community, renewal. To breathe the breath energy throughout the whole body in calm, kindness, self-acceptance, and smile, connection and spaciousness, settling into presence. So it's really beautiful, beautiful intentions, the nourishment and emptiness. Beautiful pairing as they came in one after the other. And with these intentions, really letting them touch us if you wish to. So letting that intention be embodied, whether it's our intention or we're touched by another's intention. Or there's this, as someone said, you know, this whole team. Let's maybe have a whole team of intentions, intentionality. If you're already typing, feel free to continue. Otherwise, just letting this chat go a little bit more quiet. But just holding that intention in our hearts. And see if we can bring that into the meditation. So let's take about 20 to 25 minutes for a quiet-ish meditation together. And I say quiet-ish, I'd have an idea for this meditation which will be helpful for the reflection as well. So I'd like this to be a metta meditation, But I want that in really the broadest sense of its meaning. So that's meaning metta as a mode of relationship. So metta is often translated as loving kindness, or just kindness, or welcoming, friendship. Yeah. So it's what I'm thinking in this meditation, whatever arises, can it be met with kindness, with welcoming, with gentleness? Yeah. It could be the breath, it could be body sensations, it could be a sound. So you might be familiar with metta practice, often offered to beings, you know, bring a being to mind, may you be happy. But we can also offer it to sensations and sounds and much more. So that we have relationships that are not stressful. Seeing if we can cultivate that. Let's just take a few quiet minutes to begin, just connecting to something that's present, body, breath, sounds, whatever feels helpful for you. Just bringing enough interest that you stay with it and welcome. Mind's going to wander, of course it does. We can meet that with kindness, it's not a problem. Meet it with kindness and invite the attention to connect with the breath or the sounds, sensations, whatever it is. Whatever is present, can you meet it with this metta value, metta quality? So just noticing what's in attention now, and just seeing if we can bring kindness to that. So we might usually have an idea of those distractions and those meditation object. So it's a lot less about the object, much more about the relationship. This isn't a distraction, this is a thing that we can meet with kindness. Maybe we can breathe with kindness. Maybe we can relax the body with and meet with more kindness, more welcoming, more openness. I have an invitation for the next 3 minutes, if you wish to do it. Let's see if we can open to listening to the sounds around us. Quite a open awareness into the field of sound waves, sound appearances. Seeing if we can welcome these sounds to arise and pass. Quite a wide attention, quite spacious, all directions, either radiating out kindness or welcoming in with kindness, maybe both. The main intention is just to open to whatever sound phenomena are arising and passing, noticed and released with kindness. where there's no distraction, if our attention lands on a thought or a sensation in the body, it's also wide open, listening to that with the same kindness, the same welcoming. Practice is the relationship. And then we return to listening. The next invitation, if you feel like it, we're going to switch sense door into the sense of touch, sense of body, with the same wideness of attention, same kindness. Can that radiate in towards the body sensations? Radiating kindness towards the sensations and also welcoming in with kindness. Or either one of those. Including areas of the pain or tension or tightness. May the kindness of attention move into those areas, around those areas. And just generally through the body. Sometimes we might notice attention is kind of radiating towards an area of the body with kindness. Sometimes it feels more like the sensation is rising up and being welcomed into attention. Just finding what works well. So we're just working our way around the body, the back of the body, down to the feet, the hands, the face, the head. Just playing with kindness of attention. wherever attention is, can we just bring a little more kindness? Just a little more. Maybe a little more than that. Welcoming. Allowing to be in kindness. Any thoughts that arise, just meeting them with that same atmosphere. Really coming into the last minutes, if you just want to see if you can increase the kindness a little more. You know, there's not that much more to do. Notice that in your mind's eye there's this little image of yourself meditating, sense of yourself doing this practice. What would happen if we washed kindness over this image, this meditator, this sense of self? Feeling it being held in kindness. There's any sense of this atmosphere of kindness that we're generating through this practice, some kind of field of metta that we tune into, that we call forth. Can we also hold that, the image of that, in kindness? Offering kindness to the willingness to be kind. Sending kindness to kindness, metta to metta. Slowly in your own time. Just relaxing, opening the eyes, letting in this field of light, closing the meditation, but also still more opportunities for kindness. What you see can be held in kindness. So I hope this meditation together was supportive of those beautiful intentions many of you shared, and I'm sure all of us resonated with from earlier on. And I think also, you know, these very sessions really resonate with those intentions. Guy House is offering these sessions out of kindness. Teachers and facilitators coming and offering their time out of kindness. And really, in so many ways, this whole movement of Dharma through the millennia has been just acts of kindness, this continuity of kindness. And in return, we're able to make acts of dana, acts of generosity, which also, of course, nothing other than manifestations of kindness. And so in that spirit, what I want to point out is that you coming here is an act of kindness. Yeah. This is already a dana, to come here and support each other, to practice together. And so there isn't a need for anything more. Yeah. But those who can, you're invited to visit the Gaia House website, where you can offer dana for the teachers and also for the for Gaia House itself. So, as many of you will know, you know, Gaia House, which is a really precious place, isn't receiving much in the way of income at the moment, just from the online retreats like this. So, if you're able to offer them some support, it will really help this to keep going. And like many of us, you know, the teachers and facilitators who come here to offer the sessions are, you know, doing their best in these uncertain times. But there's no expectation that you need to make yourself uncomfortable to support us. Yeah. So we're really fortunate that you're here. We're all fortunate to be able to be here, and you know, it's a blessing to be able to practice together. But if you can participate in the dana, there are links back at the Gaia House website where you got the link to come here. Some people have asked that we start sharing our links to have a more direct way to make donations to the teachers, which may be slightly less complicated than the Gaia House way. So we will start doing that. Let's see if I can just pull mine up a second. Yeah. So if you want to do it that way, I'll just put it in the chat now. I think that should open. No, it didn't look like a link. Let's try again. Yeah, wasn't really planning on doing this. No, that looks more like a link. So if you're in a position to do that, you're very, very welcome to. But this is offered without expectation. So I wanted to just share a few reflections, ideas around metta as a practice. So as you'll see in that practice there, and many of you may already be familiar with that, we can actually bring metta to anything. Yeah, we could say that metta is a way of relating. Yeah. We could say that dharma is just a training in ways of relating. And that just is like not a small just. I mean, if it were just ways of relating, that's everything, right? Anything that appears to us, we relate to it. We have a relationship to anything that appears. And that relationship can be a relationship which brings relief, it brings love, it brings happiness, and it can be a way of relating that brings difficulty, distress, and agitation. Right. So metta is a way of relating to things which brings freedom. Yeah. So we probably, hearing that, we probably want metta to be a really central tool in our toolbox, right? It's really, really helpful thing to have. And so I think one of the most important insights for modern metta meditators is that we can bring metta to anything. And what's interesting about this is that's entirely dependent on phenomena being empty, right? So I don't know how much we kind of think about that. It's like metta works in any way at all because phenomena are empty. Okay, so let's just set the foundations, right? Saying phenomena are empty really at its most extreme level means that they neither exist nor do not exist. Okay, and that might just seem like, well, what's that got to do with metta? But what we're really saying is they don't inherently exist from their own side. So this is kind of one of the most refined versions of this middle way of Buddha Dharma. Yeah. But we could say this in a much more simple way. Okay. Phenomena, which is Greek for appearances, right? Phenomena appear this way, right now, dependent on attention, right? And in particular on the atmosphere of attention. Yeah. Firstly, if you hadn't given attention to this phenomena, that you know, sound, sight, sensation of touch, yeah, all of these things, just phenomena, right, appearances, it wouldn't exist in your world. Right? If you weren't giving attention to it, it wouldn't exist in your world, because it wouldn't register in your heart mind. Yeah? It wouldn't appear in your consciousness, it wouldn't appear in your perception, it wouldn't appear in your attention. Yeah? Likewise, when you cease to bring attention to a phenomena, yeah, it ceases to exist for you in your heart-mind-made world. Yeah? Does that make sense? Is that at least kind of agreeable? Yeah, so that's the first step. Secondly, if you really feel into it, you can see there's a difference between kind of an angry, agitated type of attention and a loving, relaxed type of attention. Yeah? It's intense attention, there's really relaxed and kind, and you know. There's the what do you want attention, there's like what can I do for you kind of attentions. Yeah, we kind of move through those. And what's really liberating to see and to understand is that phenomena that appear in the intense, demanding type of attention are affected by that atmosphere in how they appear. Yeah? And the phenomena that appear in the kind of relaxed, loving, what can I do for you attention are affected by that in the way that they appear. And that's not just, you know, human beings. It's even the small things in life. Yeah? Like a bird in a tree. Yeah? Those kind of different ways that we actually relate to it affect how it appears to this very, very malleable, conscious, sensitive being. So it needs attention or it doesn't appear. And it needs a certain flavor of attention to appear that way. And metta is a certain intentional way of relating that liberates. Yeah. And why this is so important is that how appearances appear is central to how we experience life. That's what experiences are made of. Phenomena appearing in certain ways. Yeah, that's, I think it's a pretty sound definition of the human life experience. And then it's dependent on the way my attention is. And metta is a really liberating way of bringing attention. So again, you know, we come back to that first point. I think that's a really important thing to notice. I could bring metta to anything, any appearance. So, you know, we started off like setting our intentions. And all of those intentions could be said to be expressions of kindness, of welcoming, of openness, of love in a certain sense. Yeah. And we're starting to move from the subtle towards the gross, because anything gross in our life, anything coarse, anything like tangible, is rooted in the subtle, isn't rooted in the subtle intentions that came through, that brought the attention to it and brought the flavor of attention to it and helped it to appear that way. Yeah, so intentions matter and intentions are subtle, right? They lead to further thoughts, they lead to actions, and we're getting less and less subtle, we're getting more gross, right? Leads to patterns of behavior and personality. Each of these layers seems to be more fixed, and we can get fixated on them and fix them even more. Yeah? But they're all fluid and kind of flowing through. And if you think about that as you hear this translation of just the very first lines of the Dhammapada, and just a kind of footnote before we get into it, which I suppose is not really a footnote, it's an introductory note, but like it's to do with the word. They're using the word heart because there isn't really a distinction between heart and mind in Pali. There isn't a distinction in Pali. There actually isn't a distinction in the world. The distinction neither exists nor does not exist. Yeah, we sometimes fabricate it and sometimes we don't. And so in Pali they decided not to fabricate it. And so the translator decided to use heart. but they mean everything, like the way things appear, that appearance mirror, the heart mind. Yeah. Phenomena, here it is, this is the translation. Phenomena are preceded by the heart. Heart first, phenomena later. Phenomena are preceded by the heart. They're ruled by the heart. They're made of heart. If you speak or act with a corrupted heart, then suffering follows you as the wheel of the cart, the track of the ox that pulls it. Phenomena are preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. If you speak or act with a calm, bright heart, then happiness follows you like a shadow that never leaves. Like a shadow that never leaves. Really good advice, you know, really sound advice. Speak and act with a calm, bright heart, not a corrupted heart. Which is to say, you know, embody metta. Bring the intentions of metta really clear, let them form into thoughts, let them form into actions, let them become our personality, let them become the way we appear in the world. We too are a phenomena. We appear in the world, we appear in the heart minds of others. But the deeper teaching that leads to that is this: preceded by the heart, ruled by the heart, made of the heart. Phenomena are made of the heart. And this here, this that's happening to us is none other than heart. Okay, don't underestimate how much transformation is possible if all of it is made of heart. The delightful, the disgusting, it's all made of heart. And what we mean is it's empty of being this way. It's appearing this way, like we said before, but dependent on the attention. What appears in the heart mind is the perception of the world we take as reality. And when we do that, we're kind of doing a disservice to ourselves and to reality. Right? Reality is not this fixed. Yeah. When we see this as this is it, this is the way it is, you've just got to accept the way it is. You know, you kind of hear that in many circles of life, including spiritual circles, maybe even in the online Dharma hall. But it's actually the way of looking that makes it appear this way. So what about changing the way of looking? Wouldn't that also be something really worth doing? It's a really subtle middle way. Yeah, and can we linger there between, you know, well, if it isn't this way or that way, it's all just meaningless. Like it all just, you know, it's just arising depending on the mode of attention. There's no reality anywhere at all. Yeah, there isn't an independent reality. And that's what I tuned into the Dharma wanting to know what the independent reality of existence was. You know, what's this all about? Yeah. And then there can be this sense, oh, there is a reality, but I'm just too scatterbrained to see it, you know. Buddha says I'm deluded, and he's right. You know? God, got to stop being deluded, then I'll see it the way it really is. And of course, sometimes this idea gets kind of pernicious. It digs a root into our self-doubt, yeah? And it has this kind of confirmation bias. There is a way it really exists, and I need to get there, yeah? And there's certain, even kind of certain flavors of Dharma, which I don't think they're meaning to point us that way, but they even kind of linger there a little bit longer, you know. Get to know the way things really are. Get to know the way things really are, because you don't know it right now, but it's knowable, but you don't get it. But it's gettable. It's so helpful in many ways, but maybe there's something a little bit more deeper than that, yeah, that we're talking about here. And we could say Sankara Dharma, which is to say the Dharma that investigates how things are fabricated, how things come into being, yeah, dependent on the flavors of attention, actually goes further into emptiness, and it goes into this really interesting area of seeing how things fade. It's surprisingly delightful to see things fade, to see objects fade, objects of distress, objects of difficulty. And interestingly also, the sense of self can fade down, you know, quieten down. the sense of time can open out. Yeah? And we start to notice there's only the sense of things. There's only the sense of this object this way. There's only a sense of myself this way. There's only a sense of time this way. And this is what these fabricated, empty teachings are pointing towards. And normally what we see is, if you look at the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha's saying, you know, there's dukkha in experience because we're demanding on things, this tanha, this thirsting for things, demanding of stuff to be a certain way. And when we lower that demand on something, there's less dukkha, there's more freedom. And when there's this lessening of dukkha, we could say the fading of dukkha, there's also this kind of fading of the way it was appearing. When it was dukkha, it appeared this way, and now it appears differently. It's a fading of that. And when I'm not here dukkha making, you know, the human being also fades down. Yeah, I'm not demanding of anything, I'm bringing this metta flavor through. You see how metta is the replacement for demanding that leads to dukkha. It liberates objects, it liberates the self. It even liberates this tense amount of time. Time opens, dissolves. Things are fading. Things are fading as we liberate. Yeah, as we feel more liberated, as phenomena are more liberated, yeah, as things are released. So we come back to this question of reality. At what point on all of that fading is reality at its most real? Yeah? Which is the real way things are? This fading actually goes right down to what the Buddha was teaching, this unfabricated, this total cessation of appearances. Yeah? And at what point did the Buddha say, and that is reality? So we go from papancha, we go down to mindfulness, you know, papancha, this crazy thinking, yeah? Mindfulness, we go down to kind of subtler, bringing metta through, things start to really get melted, and then it goes even down. So just disappearing, disappearing, disappearing. And all along the way, it gets more and more lovely. Yeah. What we could say is actually the volume of metta increases as the level of fading increases. Yeah. And that's actually something really lovely and so fortunate. It's almost like well designed. Yeah. So as things fade, metta increases. Thank goodness. Just the kind of friend you want to get more of as other things disappear. It's so nourishing, makes the whole practice so nourishing. Yeah, which is why that the Buddha says, you know, my teachings are sweet in the beginning, sweet in the middle, and sweet in the end. Yeah. I think that's part of the sweetness flavor, is this metta coming through. So as I was saying, I like to think of metta as ways of relating. I like to think of all meditation as ways of relating. Yeah, I think it's a really skillful way. And, you know, we offered something to that in the last session I was here for. It's just go slow, meet distractions well, without rushing or the idea that they're not as worthy of our kind attention as present moment objects. Yeah, we build up this dichotomy. There's the present moment of it, and then there's my crazy mind doing all this stuff. What if we just meet the crazy mind with metta as well? Yeah. It's just another object, it's just another phenomena. I can do my metta practice on that. I can do my listening practice on that. I can do my way of relating practice on that. I don't need to reject you and go back to this. That's like some false hierarchy I just invented. Like today, breath's in, thoughts are out. Tomorrow, thoughts are in, breath's out. You know, it's like, it's this funny kind of game of how we practice. I'm not meaning to belittle it, but like, certain practices transcend these boundaries, and I love them for that. The interesting thing we were saying, you know, that appearances arise dependent on demand. They're more dukkha when there's more demand. And when the demand goes down, there's less dukkha. But when the demand goes even lower, there's no appearances, because attention, which is dependent for there to be a phenomena, needs a certain demand. I need to demand that you stay in my attention. And when that demand lessens as well, you know, it's not held there by something. It needs to be held there by something. So a practice that's attuned to the lessening of dukkha actually reveals a really magical and lovely world. And learning through applicable means how to travel along this line of turning the dukkha volume down kind of makes us magicians. Magicians that can change the way the world appears to us. Yeah? But that really matters. The way the world appears to us, I think it really matters. So as meditators, I feel like we have a certain question, like what kind of magician are you? You know, what kind of magic are you up to? What are you making magic for? Yeah? Like, magic might be to amaze. Look what I can do. Bring joy. Yeah? Fall in love with life more. But it can also be, you know, to perform impressive feats, like having an undistractable mind. Yeah? Some people, that can be your path. That's what brings you joy. That's what you really want to do with it. In a way, this magic could be said to be for opening love, for letting more love through the being. Yeah? And I think, for me, that would be one of my deepest aspirations. I think it's been, for much of my life, my deepest aspirations is not to get in the way of love quite so much, you know? It's kind of, it definitely wants to come through when I'm not interfering with it quite so much. And love comes through when fixed definitions dissolve. Yeah. This is the way it is. Now we have to do this to it, we have to fix it. It turns out reality is not a this or a that. It's something subtler, it's something wilder, it's something mysterious. We see the way this phenomena appears is dependent on the attention. If so, then it's empty. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It doesn't mean it doesn't have meaningfulness. But it really invites playfulness. And the way I see it, it's all a play. It's all fluid. It's all very malleable. And we can be very flexible. Yeah? Because we're also empty. Yeah? We're also empty. I'm a this, I'm a that. No, no. The way you feel yourself is also dependent on the way you bring attention to yourself. Yeah? It's so hard to discern at times. And so it comes back to this point. Emptiness teachings, we're left with this appropriateness. Yeah? That's what I can seem to find for myself. Appropriate to whom or to what? Is there anything to do all of this for? What are we practicing for? And maybe we would say it's some kind of love. As I said before, in all those intentions we shared at the start, all seem to have that same resonance, some quality of something like love, like metta, like kindness, like opening to life. And that sense of well-being, that sense of beauty that arises when dukkha fades. And the question might be then, how do we make this a practice? How can we make this part of our practice? Make it central to our practice? So maybe just a few practical points to kind of close with. Could imagine at least two threads of metta practice as they're taught and described. One is, you know, this expanding our heart's capacity, yeah, where we start to notice, can I bring metta to these beings? Can I bring metta to these phenomena? Yeah, starting to expand the heart's capacity, playing at the edges. Yeah. There's this lovely phrase, it's practically lifted from the suttas, where they say, you know, as you turn to someone who you kind of feel, I'm not sure I really want to offer them metta right now, or this thing, you know, this pain in my knee, I'm not sure I really want to be offering this metta right now. We say, it's not a loss to me. It's no loss to me. Or they say, it's a gain for me if you would be happy. You would be met with kindness. And beautifully, it's true. It's not a loss to us. And that's not to say, you know, have no discernment and just, you know, hang around with evil people and give them all your kindness. Sometimes metta is, look, why are you doing that? You know. And you invite them to live another way, to see it another way. You know, sometimes need to have clear actions in the world. But at the source of it is that it's no loss to me if I meet you with kindness. Yeah. What kindness ends up looking like, you'll see for yourself. Yeah. Trust your wisdom, head and heart together. And another way is also to use the metta practice as a way of nourishing this being here. So we're actually able to drench the body, heart, mind, and all appearances that arise to it, yeah, in well-being. Yeah. It kind of has this correlation to these absorption qualities, these jhanas that people refer to in the teachings, you know, really deep qualities of well-being by bringing kindness into that attention and sustaining that attention or spreading that awareness and being very, very receptive, yeah, as we go through. These images like we have in the Metta Sutta, like a mother to their child, you know, say their only child. Can you meet your experience like that? Can you meet another like that? We're held with a loving gaze to all phenomena. Yeah. And when we do that, we'll see, yeah, the what we cultivate, that steadiness, and we see it soften. And then we see the metta expand. So I just draw this to a close. I was needing to edit one of our websites recently that we co-founded with Rob Babea, and I had a little kind of search around just to check what we had there written about him, and I came across his last update. As many of you will know, he died May the 7th this year, and he dictated this statement to Catherine to share with the people he cares about and who care about him. And he says, if this is the last update, please know how much I cherish and am touched by your kindness and love, which stays with me wherever I go. And like all things associated with metta, I know that it can't be diminished by moving back and forth between us, and so it does. That it can't be diminished. So maybe we'll just have a quiet minute and then we're open to some questions and reflections.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.